Blog Talk Radio.
I've got so much to
lost their lives in a murder-suicide in the early morning hours of December 1st, 2012. These are the events as we know them. We know that on November 30th, 2012, Cassandra Perkins went to a Trey Songz concert. Then she went for drinks with friends to the Power Lights District of Kansas City. At the same time, Belcher called her at some point during that time that she was out and asked her when she was coming home. Well, at the same time, he was out with another woman by the name of Brittany Glass, and they were also in the Power Lights District. They later returned to Glass's home where Belcher initially dropped her off, but instead of leaving, he fell asleep in the car. Well, obviously, he had been out there for some time because one of the neighbors in her building called police to say that there was a suspicious car outside of the building. About 2-something in the morning, the police arrived and found a 2007 Bentley parked with Belcher sitting inside asleep. They woke Belcher, asked him for his ID, and asked him to step outside the car. He provided the ID. They smelled alcohol, but I guess because the car wasn't moving, they could not issue him a DUI. But they did ask him what he was doing there. At that time, he told them that he was, in fact, supposed to meet his girlfriend there and that he had forgotten the code to the building. So the police at that time asked Belcher if he could call the girlfriend. He then called Glass. Glass buzzed him in the building, and Glass waved to the police that everything was okay. Glass said that when Belcher arrived at her apartment that particular time, he told her that he had a meeting with the Kansas City Chiefs that morning, and if she could wake him at 6:30. She says that she woke him at 6:30. She did not say where he slept. She was questioned about that, but she just said that he and her did not have any sexual relations, but that he had stayed at her apartment, and she woke him at 6:30. We know that about the 7 o'clock hour, he arrived home, and he and Perkins got into an argument. At about 7:50, his mother, Cheryl Shepherd, overheard Belcher saying to Cassandra Perkins, "You can't talk to me like that." Then she heard gunfire. Shepherd said she then entered the bedroom where she saw Belcher injured. She saw Cassandra Perkins injured, and Belcher kneeled down, kissed Cassandra on the head, and said that he was sorry. He then kissed his daughter Zoe, said to his mother that he was sorry, and he left the house. He then drove the 10 miles to Arrowhead Stadium, where the Kansas City Chiefs practice. He asked for his coach and general manager. He told them that he killed her. He then told them to take care of his daughter, Zoe, and that he had to do this. He then heard the sirens of the police closing in. At that point, he began to walk away from them. They told him not to do it. He kneeled down behind a car, pulled out another gun, and made a cross on his chest. I'm assuming that's a religious cross, and then shot himself. Those are the events as we know them. Sad as that is, it just seems like there were so many points in which this story could have had a different end. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, whether or not the Jevon Belcher murder-suicide could have been prevented. There's so many speculations, and I've read everything that I could possibly read on this story this week. And, some people are speculating that he had, or I shouldn't say speculating, but are reporting that he had a head injury and that it was debilitating and that he was taking alcohol and booze at the time. Some people are speculating that he could have had mental illness, and that remains to be seen. But there were some things in his past that indicate at least he had a temper. So tonight we're going to start talking to some of the folks that's on the line tonight and let them chime in. I'm not going to tell y'all everything I think. We're going to see what some other people think. So tonight we're going to go to the phone lines, and we're going to pick up Linda Wilkins. Good evening, Linda. How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Good. And we're also going to pick up Kathleen Williams this evening. She's going to chime in on what she thinks as well. Good evening, Kathleen.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm great. So y'all heard me tell the events as I know them. And I've, like I said, looked up everything I could find on this story tonight. What would y'all like to say? What do you think of the story so far? Have you all formed an opinion as to what you think happened, or have you all heard things that I haven't heard so far? Either one of you can begin. We'll start with you, Kathleen.
There's a lot that's gone around. There's, some rumor. There's some speculation. I had not heard about him possibly having a head injury, but we were talking a little bit earlier, Carrie, and the place where I stopped is that this is just a devastating travesty. It's really a horrific event, a turn of events for this Jevon Belcher himself and his girlfriend, the baby, both of their families. For generations to come, will suffer from the effects of this. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where, that's not kind of, that is, that's basically where I stopped. You know, I appreciate the fact that this is a show about is this preventable, and I'm sure that we can look at any number of events, just like this gentleman that was pushed on the train track in New York this week and killed. You know, anything that we look at, we could pick it apart and say, it was preventable, or was it preventable? And then, of course, learn the lessons about what we could do to prevent these sort of things. But with this being so fresh, and with taking a look at it, you know, from all different angles, you know, I'm not sure. Again, as I mentioned to you earlier, I'm not sure if he has a single mother. I'm not sure. They haven't mentioned much about his dad at all. He's 25 years old, in the prime of his life, with an opportunity that most people would probably give a limb for, and to snuff his own life out and to take another life with him and to leave a child behind. To me, I'm stuck in that place of what a travesty, and what can, you know, exactly what you're saying, what can I do for mm-hmm. mothers of young men to help them in, God forbid, if they're experiencing something like this in the aftermath, but as they're going through, to be able to offer some support to their sons or to get some support for their sons. So, you know, I'm in that place, being able to look at a lot of angry men. You know, I was watching Save My Son just a few minutes ago. I actually have it on pause right now, you know, with some very, very angry young men. And there are things that they'll do, you know, because they need that help. So, you know, that's where I am.
Okay. Linda, what do you think?
Well, like I said, it's sad for both families, because that's a lot to be handling with two children. Well, they're really, like I said, only in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And they have so much to live for, you know, in the future. So that is so sad. And I grieve for both of the families. And I don't know about if he had a headache or a problem, but I'm sure with him being an athlete and going through whatever they go through, you just don't know. I know I've heard the reports, but I say, once again, we don't know about all that stuff, because people always say whatever, and we don't know it's the truth. So we can't judge anybody, because it's not for us to judge whatever went on. Mm-hmm. Only him and her and God knows what truly happened that night.
And that's very true. And, you know, but the thing is, and I was just thinking as you were saying that, you know, football players are taught to hit, to knock something down, you know, and that's when they score. You know, the harder they hit you, the harder they knock you down, you know, then everybody cheers. And so is that like a sport that teaches violence? You know, so therefore, you know, you resolve conflict with violence. Is that maybe what the message is being sent to an immature player?
Not really. I mean, because most people, when they're like in like what sixth grade, when they can start football and stuff, you're supposed to tackle.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you got to be so vengeous that you just hurt somebody and like try to kill somebody.
Well, you know, that's in sixth grade, but as you get to the NFL, and I've been watching a lot of football lately, y'all, they hit them hard. I mean, and it's like, you know, I think Vick is out for the season, Michael Vick, because he got sacked one time, 10 times in one game. I mean, and they didn't just knock him down. They hit him as hard as they could. It was violent. And so I'm just wondering, you know, if you get hit one too many times, does that mess up something mentally? I don't know, y'all. I'm just asking. But I'm just saying.
Well, he was hurt last year. He got hurt last year. So all
that. Well, he's out for the
last year.
He's out for the season this year because, you know, his teammates just were not protecting him, and he just kept getting hit. But my point is that the sport itself is so violent. They're not just knocking him down. They're hurting him. But I don't know. That's just one observation. Is the sport so violent that it teaches violence? Let's go to the phone lines. Let's pick up area code 858-401. Good evening. You're on center stage. Okay, I'm sorry, I hit your phone line and disconnected you. I apologize. Call back in, caller. I hit the phone line and disconnected. But that was just one observation. But one thing that did, like, shake me to the core this week is when I heard the 911 call. It looks like, and I don't know what 911 operators are taught to do, I've never had any 911 training, but it just seemed like if someone says somebody has been shot, that just changes everything. I just think your conversation, you know, I don't know, well, you all just have to judge for yourself. But this person just seemed to be focusing on the wrong things. It just seemed like she was trying to get information that really wasn't about saving this person's life. And you all can judge this for yourself. But I just thought, listening to this 911 tape, what was this operator thinking? And does she need some more training? Because this was a life-threatening situation. And I think, I don't know that it could have saved, I don't think it could have saved anybody's life. But at the same time, I think maybe if the operator could have been just a little bit more sensitive to maybe the situation. I'll let you all judge for yourself. This is the Belcher Perkins 911 call that was heard that day. Take a listen.
Address. I think there's been a shooting. So get with the address. I'm working on it. Ma'am?
5 Chrysler Avenue. Yes.
Is that you on the way?
It's a house.
Not yet.
Please. Oh, my God. God, Cassie.
Shooting at Chrysler, it sounds like. Okay. And ma'am? Ma'am? Her name is... Oh. Is that a house or an apartment? Okay, her son did this. Ma'am?
Ma'am, let me see if I can help you. Are you with the patient now?
Oh, yes. The baby's crying. Yes.
Okay. Okay, we're on the way. We've been on the way the whole time. How old is the patient?
22.
A male or female?
Female.
And is he breathing?
She's still breathing, but barely. Please hurry. I don't know how many times he's got her. They were arguing.
Okay, so she's been shot?
No.
Okay, right now, is she awake?
Yes, stay with me. The ambulance is on the way. You hear me? You hear me? Cassandra! Hey, stay with me.
Okay, listen, ma'am, is she awake?
She's barely. She's just barely.
Can she hear what you're saying?
Yes, she's moving when I talk to her.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Is she bleeding?
Yes, she is.
Where is she bleeding from?
I can't tell. In the back, it looks like.
Okay, well, we don't want... Go ahead, Petey. Where is your son at?
Yeah.
Huh?
Look, please, just get this family up here, please.
We're on the way. Where's your son at?
He left.
He left?
Yes.
Okay. They were arguing any other?
Yes, they was arguing.
Okay, what's your son's name?
Please just get the ambulance here.
Ma'am,
I have to get the
baby. Ambulance is on the way. What's your son's name? What kind of car did your son leave in? Or is he on foot?
Sounds like she disconnected.
She doesn't want to answer any questions. But she said they were arguing and her son shot her.
Okay. Now, I wanted to give her some bleeding controlling advice also, but...
Got the open line.
Ma'am, are you there? Ma'am? Hello, ma'am?
If you want to keep this open.
Yeah.
Hi there.
Hello. We need a code 1 ambulance. Oh, they think he's probably dead. Number 1 Arrowhead Drive at Practice Field at Key Stadium. It's a self-inflicted shooting. They said it's a done deal. There's got a player that shot himself.
The player?
Yeah.
Okay, what parking lot or whatever?
Okay, but yeah, they still need you to confirm it.
I know, but what parking lot or whatever did
it say? Oh, it's the west side of the stadium at the practice field.
And you guys are there?
Yeah.
All right, well, get over. We're on the way.
We're on the way.
Okay.
Medic 39, Chrysler, on a shooting, non-emergency stage for the police on 8-4. Medic 39, Chrysler, on a shooting, stage, non-emergency stage for the police on 8-4. Number 39, make the call with Medic 39, Chrysler, non-emergency stage for the police on a shooting. A4, Pumper 39, make the call with Medic 39, Chrysler on a shooting. Non-emergency stage for the police. Respond A4.
Medic 39 responding.
Medic 39, so you're responding.
Pumper 39 and Medic 39 responding, non-emergency.
Affirmative. Medic 29, Pumper 39 responding. Not emergency. Reported shooting. Stage for police. Scene not secure.
Medic 39, we're staged.
Medic 39, staged.
Pumper 39, staging.
Pumper 39, staged. Medic 39, Pumper 39, PD reports on scene.
Copy. Pumper 39 on scene.
Pumper 39 on scene. Dispatch, Medic 39.
Medic 39 shows on scene.
Medic 39 on scene.
Medic 39.
Pumper 4, you're in service. Command terminated. Medic 39.
Emergency with 1 and 2 firefighter.
Medic 39, missed the destination. Copy transporting emergency. Medic 39, could you repeat the destination?
Center point.
Medic 39, center point, emergency.
Medic 39 is at the hospital. I'll need extra time for cleanup, please.
Medic 39 at the hospital, extra time cleanup.
Okay, y'all, that was the 911 tape. And it just seems like, I know it's an emergency situation, and I know the people are trained, but it just seems like that training was just, it just seemed like they were more concerned about the details than they were about how can we save her life. Or did y'all get that, or was it just me?
No, because they always have to ask you those questions so they can know what's going on. And I think that they probably did handle the situation like they are supposed to or trained to. And she wouldn't really talk and tell them a lot of stuff. I think she was upset because she knew what just happened, but, you know, with her son and that girl. So I think they did. It just, she wouldn't even answer a lot of questions that they were needing to know.
What do you think, Kathleen?
Well, it's not like you blended a lot of the calls together, right? You blended the three calls, the one from the stadium and the one from the house.
Right.
And so you were talking about the one from the house or all three of them?
Well, you know, I'm talking about the emergency situation, the first call, because the second call, they say he's already gone. So they're just saying basically come in to the scene on the second one and just say, you know, DOA. But as far as the first call is concerned, she's saying the lady's bleeding. She's still with her. And I did not hear one time in that call where they told her how to administer first aid.
Yeah, that's well. At the end of the call, after she was going to let the paramedics in or something, and so the operator was saying, I wanted to give her some first aid advice or how to stop the bleeding and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I am a medical professional, so I would have to listen to that again in more detail before I would criticize the operator. But I do believe that you're right. I think in situations like that, the thing that I'm a nurse. I'm an RN. So as a medical professional, and my job was not to handle phones for emergencies. I was there on scene. So if we were with family members and so forth, the most important thing, if we were going to keep that particular family member, like, outside or whatever, is to try and keep them calm and to try and remain calm. So sometimes when I hear the 911 operators, it's like over the top with their flatness, if you will.
Okay.
And a lot of times it feels like they are just plain old inappropriate with what they're asking. And I've had to call 911 myself and have been extremely critical of the people on the other line, because I'm figuring, like, look, I'm telling you that there's a crisis over here and you want to ask me, you know, what color underwear I have on or something crazy. You're like, come on. You know, let's get to the point, ask what's important, and, yes, keep calm, but dispatch the police, the medics, and everything else that you need, and give me the information that I need to try and handle this situation. And I don't know that all of the operators are trained as effectively as they should be. I'm not specifically speaking about this one, but that has been my experience on numerous occasions, that I feel like the 911 operator is just kind of disconnected. And, you know, and I go back to some, it may seem over the top, but I know their situation is to try and get you calm so that they can talk to you. And the other thing that they want to do a lot of times is keep you on the line, which I thought that she was doing pretty effectively with her, but just not, you know, necessarily asking the questions that would keep her calm. And how can you? You know, she's holding her daughter-in-law in her arms trying to keep her from dying. And, you know, it's a difficult situation to be in, so.
I don't know. That was just an observation. Y'all, we've been veered off from the subject, but that was just an observation I saw with the 911 call that, you know, this lady is frantic and somebody's just been shot and she's holding them in her arms and she's trying to communicate with them to keep them with her. And I never once heard in the 911 tape where the operator said, this is what you do to stop the bleeding. Do you see the wound? Do this or do that. And I never heard that in the 911 tape. And that was somewhat troubling to me. Okay, y'all, we're going to go to the phone line. We see 225-773. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, everybody. Hey, this is Donald Lee giving you a call. You know, that's interesting that you would bring that up. And you know, like I said, like Kathleen said earlier, I don't know if I could make a judgment call on that. And the reason why I say that is because according to reports that I read, she was shot 9 times.
Okay.
So I'm thinking this person shot 9 times with hollow point bullets. So I'm thinking that it's not just like a single gunshot wound where you can pay attention to one thing, but you got a whole lot of other things going on at one time, and then you got a frantic woman on the other end, and I don't know how you could, to be honest with you, I don't know how you could calm somebody that's in that type of situation.
But I don't know that she ever even asked her how many times she was shot. I didn't hear that question. I just heard, you know, that she was she told her that she was shot, and the operator acknowledged that she did understand that the lady had been shot. But, you know, past that, she didn't ever seem to ever address how to administer aid to someone that was shot. That was just my observation. But, you know, I don't know that they could have saved her, but it just seems like, you know, in a situation like that, you know, you just have so many different variables going on that you just wish that more could have been done, but maybe it was a situation in which, you know, she would have left us anyway, but it just seemed sad. But what did you think of the case, Donald? What did you think of this particular situation?
I think it's a travesty. It's a sad case of affairs when somebody's runs out of hope. And one of the things I've been saying all along is that somebody who feels like they have no hope, like there are no options, that's really a sad place to be. And I just wish that and what I heard was that the Kansas City Chiefs had already had some type of system set in place where they were, I think, counseling them. Some degree, I just wish that you know there could have been something set in place just in case, you know, if it wasn't where there was some spiritual guidance where they could understand, I would put the God factor in there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Again, it sounds like a situation where he felt like, you know, whatever it was that happened, whatever it was that she did to upset him or to drive him over the edge. He felt like that was the only recourse. That was the only way to respond to that, and it's really, really unfortunate. You know, it's really, really unfortunate that he felt that way. You know, and much of what I read was that he was a pretty good guy, and not only that, I read that he was actually, the irony of it all was that he was part of a group in the NFL that was against domestic abuse. I thought that was pretty interesting in itself.
Yeah, I heard that too.
And, well, you know, the thing is, you know, could is, and I hate to say this, y'all, but it just seems like he had two personalities. It seems like, you know, on one hand, people saw him to be like this person that was an overachiever. Everything he put his mind to, you know, he did it well. But then on the other hand, he seemed to struggle with anger issues because they said that when he was with the University of Maine, he had had a situation with a girlfriend that had gotten him angry, and he put his fist through a glass window, I think. And that was reported by incident report at the University of Maine. So it just seems like maybe this is a personality, a person who had two personalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me jump in for a second. Listen, when I was in high school, college, if I could count the number of men that I know that put their fist through a window, a door, a locker, a wall, you know, I'm not ready to go there on him because there's so many, you know, that's something that guys do. I did a lecture once to a room filled with men, and I asked them, how many of you have put your fist through a wall or a door or a window? And everyone except one person raised their hand. And I'm talking about, like, you know, 70 or 100 guys.
Okay, so that's not a fair gauge. Okay, I can go there with you.
I don't think so.
Okay, we can go there. Area code 817-654. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hi, this is Paul Stockard.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
You know, one of the things I wanted to comment on was I think that when the story first broke and they jumped to the fact that, you know, there was a gun involved, immediately the people who are anti-gun wanted to use this as another shining example as to why we need to ban all handguns, and I just don't think that's the case. You know, we kill far more people in traffic accidents than we do with handguns, and we're not trying to ban cars. So what's happening is that there are people who just use this as an excuse. Look, I think that I didn't know this gentleman, but obviously he was a little immature and was not able to handle whatever crisis life handed it to him. Because I assure you, whatever the problem was, it wasn't all of that.
But somebody has said that at one time she left since she had the baby, and she had returned. So at some point, I guess he convinced her to come back. But obviously, whatever it was bad enough that a person who just had a baby left. Because the baby was only 3 months old at the time of this incident. So if whatever happened between him and Cassandra caused her to leave after she had the baby, that's a big indicator that there were some serious problems going on when a woman who just had a baby leaves the house.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard for me to judge them. You know, when we're at that, I was that young once, and I remember doing silly things and blowing up at small, you know, things now that seem rather trivial to me. So a lot of times what you're dealing with, you're just dealing with very young adults who are dealing with new emotions, new situations, stressful things, and they haven't quite got the coping skills for. It is quite unfortunate that he did what he did. I mean, you know, now we have this child who's parentless. But I think that when it first came out, I mean, we're discussing their personal life. But I think what the story, when the story first broke, it was used as an example of another one of these crazy gun violent things, just like what we had happen in Arizona at the movie theater during the Batman movie.
Right.
You know, just because you have some people who don't know how to behave rationally with their guns, that's no reason to ban all guns.
And I agree with that totally. Let me make mention, I saw 785 pop up several times, and every time I came, got ready to come to you, you leave the board, so I apologize. If you'd like to chime in on tonight's conversation, give us a call at 347-850-8390. Again, if you'd like to chime in on the Belcher Perkins murder-suicide that occurred in Kansas City on December 1st, give us a call at 347-850-8390. If you just tuned in, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the Javon Belcher murder-suicide. Was it preventable? Did alcohol or a brain injury, financial problems, or immaturity or all the above lead to this tragedy? We'd like to know that. If there's some information that I'm not reporting on tonight, listen, set me straight. I have tried to read everything I could possibly read on it. And another thing that's come into play, like I spoke of, you know, as I detail the events as they occurred, this Brittany Glass person is who he spent most of that night with. What transpired with he and Brittany Glass that would make him come home and snap and kill Cassandra Perkins? Were they arguing over the fact that he'd been out all night with this other woman? Because from what I'm understanding from all I've read, this wasn't the first time that he'd been out with Brittany Glass. So I'm not saying he was having an affair, but, you know, it doesn't look good if you spend a night at somebody else's apartment when you're not far from home. And when you could, if you made your way to their house, you could have made your way home. So I don't know. I'm not blaming anybody. You know, I'm really not. I'm just trying to better understand what could have been said. And let's go to that. She said, or she said something to him that caused him to say, "You can't talk to me like that," before he shot her. Did that play a role in it? Anybody, chime in. Y'all, Donald Lee, what do you think?
Can you repeat the question, please?
What was that question? Did Brittany Glass, the other woman, or, you know, the situation that she said something, meaning Cassandra Perkins said something that caused him to say, "You can't talk to me like that," did one of those things or possibly both cause this whole thing to happen?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, one of the things that you could, you know, probably infer is that, you know, she, like you said, she probably, Perkins probably said something again. You know, this could have been something that had been going on in terms of him being with this Glass person, and then she said something and probably attacked his manhood. I don't even know, but whatever it was, you know, whatever it was, it had been pretty serious. And my guess would be the fact that he did spend, you know, it was like 6:30 in the morning before he got home or before he left her apartment.
Exactly.
So any number of things could have been said.
And
but
you know what, the
I would guess that it would have all tied into the fact that he was out all night. But then wasn't she out for the most part of the night as well?
I understand she was out to about 1. Is that not correct? Yeah, about 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The Perkins family obviously is not happy about some of the things they're reading and hearing. And they actually released a statement this week, which I was very surprised by. It says that in the statement, the Perkins family took issue with the rumors and the speculations about the death of the woman they call Casey. And in the statement, it goes like this. It says, Cassandra turned 22 on October 14th this year. Her life was just beginning when it was taken so unexpectedly last week. There has been a disheartening amount of rumors and speculation surrounding the tragic loss of our Casey. No one will ever truly know why this happened, nor is there anything to be said that could justify or ease our pain. We miss her deeply and would like to shed light on the person she really was. And they go on to say that Cassandra will be remembered as our fun-loving, outgoing Casey, always full of laughter, kindness, optimism, and inspiration. She was energetic, happy, and loved life. She could find the good in any person or situation. Sandra was loyal, honest, and trusting. Overall, she was dedicated to starting her new family and beyond excited about being a mother of her sweet baby. We will raise baby Zoe in the knowledge of the love from which she was born. Please keep us in prayer, as God will be our strength. Now, that was the statement released from the Perkins family this week. So, obviously, they're not very happy about people speculating. But, you know, in a situation like this, for some reason, this tragedy has, you know, really kind of, I don't know, touched a lot of people. Because it touched me, and I hear stories all week, you know, every week. But this particular story struck me hard. And I don't know, it's because I myself remember a situation where I could have very easily been a Cassandra Perkins. And it was just a situation in which immaturity wouldn't let me back down, and a situation in which, you know, the person was just very aggressive in the way that they were handling the situation, and it was just something in me that just did not have sense enough to just, you know, walk away and just keep my tongue. And so I really can see the flip side of this, you know, from Perkins' side, and then I don't know what was going on with Mr. Belcher that particular night, but I also can see someone who has too much on him and can snap. So I really don't come into this tonight with any judgment, you know, because I look at this as a situation in which, but by the grace of God, there goes I. And I think that's what me and Kathleen said tonight, that, you know, it's just the wrong set of circumstances. And, you know, were there signs that Cassandra saw when she walked away, y'all, that she knew that, you know, maybe the relationship wasn't what she wanted it to be? And what made her come back? Kathleen, you want to chime in on that? What made her come back? Did I lose Kathleen?
Oh, no, I'm here. I'm sorry, I had you on mute.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I can't say. And again, I was telling you earlier that I haven't, I would not be the one to make any calls on this at all, other than, you know, it's just horrible, you know. And just like you're saying, you had faced a situation where some things could have gone miserably wrong, and, you know, there for the grace of God, the fact that you're here talking with us tonight and able to shed some light on this topic. And, you know, same thing for me. And I watch young men all the time, and they, just like the gentleman caller said, a lot of times it's just not equipped to handle the stress that they happen to be under, and no one, you know, grabbed them quick enough to say, hey, you know, man, come over here, sit down, let me talk to you. Young lady, come over here, sit down, let me talk to you. And that's what I consider myself, a person who is here to mentor our young people, because I needed somebody to mentor me, you know, and if I can do that for somebody, then that's one way that I can see that this kind of a situation can be prevented in the future. That was your question at the top of the show. We can prevent it. You know, how can it be prevented? Each and every one of us can prevent another Jovan from happening, another Casey from happening, another three-month-old baby from going out without their parents. Each one of us can do it. And that's what I believe that's what we're here for, is to minister, to mentor, and to help our young people get through these very turbulent moments in their lives.
You know, Wanda and I were talking this week earlier about the fact that, you know, and we're just going to call it what it is. She's 22, and they said in 2010 she moved in with him. Sometimes in life, you know, again, there may be a little immaturity there. You always need something of your own. So was it a situation in which she didn't bring anything financially to the situation, let's just say that? And so sometimes when you're not bringing any finances to a situation, somebody else feels like then they own everything, and maybe you too. And not that that's, you know, I'm not judging him, but I'm just saying sometimes that can happen, that, you know, maybe he felt disrespected by something that she said to him simply because maybe I'm paying for everything. I got you in this nice house. I got you in this nice neighborhood. How dare you talk to me like that? Linda, you remember how we discussed that?
Well, you can't degrade a man, no matter what the situation is. No man wants to be degraded. And whether he's, you know, if he's paying everything, whatever, they never want to be degraded, whether they didn't have any money or not. Just like, you know, when I was coming up, I had a job and stuff, and I've had men who didn't have stuff, and I wasn't going to let them talk to me any kind of way, so I had to put them out.
But again, it comes to if the person who has the most feel. I heard Deion Sanders say on the reality show that he had with Pilar one time, he was jokingly saying it, but he said it nonetheless. He said, when Pilar moved in here, all she brought was her bag. And she looked at him like she couldn't believe he said it on TV, but he did. But, you know, sometimes when a man or whoever is the person in the relationship who has everything, maybe they feel that, you know, the other person, I don't know, isn't I don't know. I don't know how to word that. Well, I think y'all know what I mean. They just feel like they have the ups on the person in the relationship, so therefore things should maybe go mostly their way. And so I just wonder when he said the words that, you know, you can't talk to me like that, that almost seems like someone is speaking to someone about disrespect. You know, I don't know. But that's just what I thought about that. But I'm going to tell y'all something that USA Today said this week. They said that that the Kansas City Chiefs have already established a formal trust for Zoe. You remember that Belcher asked them to take care of the daughter. So they've already established a trust. The name of it is the Zoe Michelle Belcher Irrevocable Trust. And the families of the Chiefs, Chairman Clark Hunt, the Kansas City players, and the coaches have already donated to this trust fund. And the team announced that in a statement this week. And according to the NFL.com, little Zoe will be the beneficiary of the collective bargaining agreement that Belcher signed last year. And so Zoe's estate will go something like this, y'all. Donnelly, your line is open again. It goes something like this. Zoe's estate or guardian will receive $108,000 a year. When Zoe is five, she will receive $48,000, then $52,000 until she is 18 or 23, depending upon if she continues her education and finishes college. So that's not a whole lot of money. I mean, I know they got some trust set up for her, but, I mean, it's not like she's going to be a rich kid unless people donate a whole lot of money to her. So, you know, why would Belcher kill himself and leave somebody else to take care of his daughter? I don't get it. Donnelly, you want to chime in on that? I just don't get it.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Sure. Begin.
You know, to be honest with you, the only answer for that I would have for that is selfish. Selfish. You know what I mean? I mean, like you said, I mean, it boils down to I want to do things my way. You know, I'm hurting. It's all about me, and I can't take this. And so I'm going to kill this person. And well, what about your daughter? Well, I'll the Chiefs will take care of her or something. And that's just an act of selfishness all the way around. You know, I mean, he didn't think about his daughter. He didn't think about his mother. He didn't think about her family. He didn't think about anything but how he was feeling. You know. And that's really sad. It's a real sad state of affairs, you know, and it's sad. I mean, but there is no other way to put it other than he was just totally selfish.
It does seem like he was selfish. He was actually introduced to Belcher. I mean, Belcher was actually introduced to Cassandra Perkins, by Jamal Charles and his wife, Whitney. They have also created a banking account to benefit Zoe. But all these accounts and all that's great, and it's very nice that people are looking after her. But at the same time, it didn't have to be that way. It just seems like, why would you ask somebody to take care of your child when you had every opportunity to not do what you did? And I'm not judging them, y'all. I'm just being – I just don't understand. I'm asking that as a person who doesn't understand. So I'm not judging them, but I'm just trying to understand, you know, how someone who is so brilliant on one hand and such an achiever could then lose it, you know, and then do what he did. But, you know, there were so many things that came out this week that was shocking to me. Like Don alluded to earlier, they were seeking counseling with the Kansas City Chiefs counselor. She left at some point since she had the baby. And it was believed that they were arguing over finances and some other things. It just seems like when you put all that together, that's a whole lot to be bringing a new baby into. So it just, and by the way, little Zoe was born on 9/11, and it just almost seems like when she came in here, you know, everybody knows now, considers 9/11 the day of emergency. It just seems like to me when little Zoe came into the world, she came in chaos. Do y'all agree with that, or is it just me that looks at it like that?
Well, it certainly sounds that way.
Yeah. It just seems like she was when she got here, it was already so much going on, and then she's born on 9/11, and it just seems like it was just a crisis just coming into. Well, let me ask you this: I read that Javon Belcher's mother was only 54, and I thought, you know, I don't know how old y'all are, but you know, he was 25. You think she could have said something that day to calm the situation, or was it just a situation that was destined to happen?
I don't know that it was a situation that was destined to happen, but what I do know is that sometimes when somebody gets it in their head that they're going to do something, you know, like I said, I never heard anything said about how he had, before the shooting, he had talked to his mom, he was irritated, and his mom tried to calm him down. It sounded like it was something that he knew. Had he said something to his mother, she would have tried to talk him out of it. And so, you know, it's just one of those situations where she's in one room with the baby, and then, you know, and then this is happening in a whole other side of the house. So I'm not sure that from a standpoint, from that standpoint, that there was anything that could be done. Now, of course, you know me. My whole thing is I like to just really focus on the fact that, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, I wish, you know, I'm not saying that that had not occurred, but I wish that there was some type of spiritual guidance there, some, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, like a pastor in the picture or a church in the picture, to where he could have turned to the pastor, you know, for guidance, because obviously he was troubled, and what he was dealing with didn't just happen. I mean, that didn't just happen that morning.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
was that's a result of, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. That was something that, the final straw something that had been going on for a while. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
If he had gotten some type of counseling from a pastor or a church, you know, from the church or something, now I think that it could have been prevented. So it was, to answer your question, you know, the theme of the show is, could it have been preventable? Yes. Was
well, you
the
know, speaking
of
churches,
I don't think so.
Well, you know, speaking of churches, you brought that into the equation. They were attending a church on a regular basis. They were attending the Landmark Church in Kansas City. As a matter of fact, that's where his memorial service was held. They report that they were actually attending service on a regular basis up until the time that the baby was born, and then they had not seen them back at church since that time. So
Carrie, I think it's interesting that you would say that, because my immediate question would be, I mean, I've read articles and pretty much been trying to follow it as much as I could. But I've never one time read anything that suggested. I've never read anything where a reporter from the Kansas City Star or any other the media actually interviewed anyone from the church in terms of the pastor. You know what I mean? From a pastoral standpoint, you know, did you guys minister to them? You know what I mean? Did y'all counsel them? I mean, I got what the Kansas City Chiefs were doing, but you know, if it's been on record or it's recorded that they were indeed in a church, how come we haven't seen any articles written, you know, from a standpoint of what the pastor had to say about it?
And I don't think they sought counseling through the church, because where I got that information was ESPN was reporting about the memorial service, and they were saying that the Landmark Church is where the memorial service was held, and they were saying that I think it was one of the ushers who was related to the minister said, you know, the information about he saw them there on a regular basis up until the time that the baby was born. I think that they were seeking their counseling through the Kansas City Chiefs. So maybe that was a different type of counseling, maybe not necessarily spiritual counseling. But if you still take the two and put it together, you got people who were going to church, people who were seeking counseling. It just seems like maybe those two people, sometimes you can love people, but you aren't supposed to be with them just because you love them. So maybe these two people should have been together.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just a tough situation. It's hard to really make a call on it, because you know only Javon Belcher knows.
I mean, as far as we know. Now, I don't know if he shared anything with any of his teammates or anybody. Nobody's coming forth to say, you know, they don't want to, you know what I mean? They don't want to further, I guess, tarnish his name any more than it already is, and so therefore they're not saying everything. I don't know, but it's just one of those things where all you can say is that it's sad. I mean, I'm sorry that something like this happened. You know, and now I will say this. What I'm hoping is happening around the league, around the NFL, and just period in general, is that this would be an example as to what can be done, like you said, what can actually be done to prevent something like this happening again. You know what I mean? You know, mm-hmm. where there isn't a copycat, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? So what is being put in place, you know, in the NFL, to examine the players, you know, check with them what's going on. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, but it's certainly something that I think that the NFL since we're talking about the NFL, that the NFL should look into. But then again, you know, it's tough. I mean, you know, because it kind of sounds like they actually had something put in place. I mean, they were being counseled.
Mm-hmm.
So what for, you know, I don't know. They were going to church, like you said. They were being counseled already.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that all I can say is that when somebody has, obviously, this is an example of when somebody has in their mind they're going to do something and they're hell-bent on doing it, then, you know, they're going to plot. Now, I heard one of my former colleagues, because I'm a former copy editor for the Kansas City Star, and one of my former colleagues from the Star, originally formerly with the Star, Jason Whitlock, I'm sure you probably heard that name, because I think Bob Costas was quoting him, and Jason Whitlock said that this is an example as to why handguns should be banned. Mm-hmm. And my thing is, the bottom line, Jason said that if he had not had access to a gun, they would both still be living today. But see, he could have stabbed her. You know what I'm saying? He could. There's any number of ways he could have done that. You know what I mean? So banning handguns is not the answer. But I just don't know what else could be said about it. You know what I mean? It seemed like there was something put in place. There were efforts to calm the situation before it got to that point. Yet this happened.
You know, Deadspin.com, and I'm not familiar with this website, but they reported that sources say that on November 18th, after the loss, I guess the Kansas City Chiefs lost to the Cincinnati Bengals.
They actually won the. I don't know if that's who they played Cincinnati, but they actually won the game the next day.
Yeah, they did.
So November 18th, they didn't play the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'm not even sure which. I can't remember if it was the Bengals they played, but
they won.
The killings happened on a Saturday. Was it Saturday? And then the Chiefs played the next day on Sunday and won that game this past Sunday. I can't remember.
Okay. This is something that happened November 18th. So this was like last month. And they were saying that after that game, they lost to the Cincinnati Bengals. And they were saying that Belcher was dazed and was suffering from short-term memory loss. He could not remember the events that had taken place prior to the game or what he had said to Cassandra Perkins to get her to return home. So was he suffering from a head injury? You know, that's something that, you know, we won't know. They probably won't disclose to us because there's an autopsy being or was done, but, you know, the results won't be out for weeks now. But that's just a question because the New York Daily News noted that since 2011, five other NFL players have killed themselves. There was Dave Durson, I guess is how to pronounce his name,
yeah.
Ray Easterling.
Right. Durson, right.
Okay, Durson, Ray Easterling, Junior Seau, or is that how you pronounce it?
Junior Seau. But Carrie, these are guys who were long out of the NFL. These were like results. They had been suffering for some while. You know, for a while they had been suffering, and this was a deterioration that was going on over a period of years. Okay, I wouldn't think that what Javon Belcher was dealing with I wouldn't think that would be remotely close to what these guys were dealing with. You know what I mean? This was a series of concussions for them over an extended amount of years. Let's remember that Belcher has only been in the NFL 3 years, so it's not like he had like a long career of you know, getting banged in the head, you know, and you know, suffering head injuries and concussions.
But when you speak something like that, though, one hit to the head, you know, exactly the same to you may not be exactly, it may not affect you exactly the same way it would affect me, though. So a head injury can be a funny thing. It depends upon who takes the hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm assuming here. So I'm just saying, just because he was in there a shorter time than them doesn't mean that he didn't take some serious hits to the head.
But you know, again, those guys, you were naming guys who had been, you know, playing in the league for, I mean, over years and years and years. A lot of these guys were retired for years. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things where, you know, and then you're not active too. Then, you know, I just would think that it wouldn't be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then again, I'm not a medical expert, so, you know.
Didn't he play college football as well?
Did he what? He
played college football. I got that. But then again, that's still a whole other level of football when you get to the NFL.
And you forget he wrestled. I think he wrestled as well.
Oh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did.
You know, I don't know. I'm just saying. If you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight for the topic, the Javon Belcher murder-suicide. Was it preventable? Did alcohol, a head injury, financial problems, and immaturity all play a role in this tragedy? That's what we're talking about tonight. You know, another thing that was shocking about this particular situation is that Belcher majored in child development and family relations. And some people speculate that it was possibly because he grew up without a father. Yet he left his 3-month-old daughter, Zoe, without a mother or a father. How can that be? I mean, I don't know. That was just a connection that somebody made, but that's very interesting.
It's a dumb call, right? And it's ironic all the way around. You're right. It's ironic all the way around. You know, what he majored in, and he certainly was, you know, he had gotten received his a 4-year degree inside of 4 years.
Mm.
You know, so academically, you know what I mean? I mean, it's not like he was just some, you know, some kid who just kind of, you know, just fooled around in college and played football and didn't go to class. So that certainly wasn't the case. So he was an intelligent young man.
You know, and oftentimes when people don't choose majors in college for the money, they'll choose it because of some connection that they feel to the field. And you would feel that if he felt like, you know, I guess he wanted to bring something to that field that maybe, you know, he hadn't had as a child. It's just amazing. You know, that's why this story has touched me so this week, because nothing about it makes any sense. And I'm sure God knows, but to the rest of us, I think everybody's mouth is hanging open trying to figure out what the heck went wrong. You know, there's so many contradictions. You know, the fact he was an overachiever, you know, in his schooling, and then on the field, you know, not being drafted, then still making his way into it as a free agent, or is that what they call him, a free agent? And then going on, you know, to be a starter for the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the fact that he was likable and you know, people said he was, you know, a good person. The fact that he spent the night with someone else the night before or the morning of the killing and then came home and killed Cassandra Perkins. It just seems like so many contradictions. Again, like we talked about, the fact he majored, you know, in a field that seems like he loved children, but at the same time to leave his child parentless and ask someone else to take care of her. It just seems like there was many contradictions to this person. You know, maybe it was all
And to add to that, Carrie, he does this completely irrational thing, kills this woman. Not just this woman, but kills his daughter's mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
Totally irrational. Goes to the
Kansas City Chiefs complex, sports complex, and calmly, obviously calmly and sedately, talks to Chiefs officials and thanks them for giving him the opportunity to play in the NFL and he thanked them respectfully and cordially for the help that they provided him since he had been with the organization, you know, and then walks off a few paces and just does this totally irrational thing again. I mean, so it's kind of really kind of tough to kind of put your finger on what was going on in his head. other than something demonic, and I'm gonna say that because it's interesting to me too. At least twice. I had read in the Kansas City Star where the reporter actually used the word demon, that he was dealing with some personal demons, and the reporter said, you know, who would have known or who would have thought that he would have had these demons that would cause him to snap like that? You know what I mean? You know, there's no other way to explain it. You know,
You think it was demons?
From a spiritual standpoint, but I understand what's the church stuff. I mean, just from a natural standpoint, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know.
If he was going through something that we may not ever know, but so we can't judge. But you know, we just didn't know what's going on with him. It might have been a lot that you know nobody knew.
But one thing that I've said before, and I'll continue to say it, I do believe that this was preventable.
Yeah.
You know what's amazing to me, though? Let's go here. Why would you do what you did and then go, as you just said, you know, to where he worked and to the people obviously he considered, I don't know, maybe mentors? But if you, it just seems like, again, contradictions. If you love your mother, why would you leave her as the last thing that she sees you do? And then if you respect these coaches and your general manager and you thank them so much for the opportunity that they gave you, why would you leave their last memory of you killing yourself?
Selfishness and selfishness.
Wow. That's why the story is just fascinating. Nothing about it makes sense. I mean, if you're talking about zigzagging all over the place, that's what this story seems to me. It just zigzag. Nothing connects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just want to know, like, that's why I can believe maybe mental illness played a role and maybe alcohol on top of mental illness maybe played a role simply because, you know, the fact that when he shot Cassandra Perkins, then he knelt down and kissed her and said, I'm sorry. Well, then that doesn't speak to mental illness because most of the time people who are mental don't think they don't have any remorse about what they did. So,
exactly.
Again, a contradiction.
Exactly.
You know, so nothing can you just say definitively, this is what I think happened, because just as sure as you head in one direction, something veers you the other way. And so just, I don't know. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are lost about this too, because I understand that the organization obviously, you know, is broke up about it, but they did reach out and they offered to pay for the funeral services of both. The organization said that they did not want the families to be worried about the finances, you know, of all these massive bills stemming from these funerals and memorial services. So I understand that the Belcher family graciously accepted. They said basically when they contacted the Kansas City Chiefs, their words were that they were offering assistance to both families. So obviously that they both are going to be taken care of, and that's a very good thing. But does the Kansas City Chiefs have a role in this? They knew Cassandra, they knew Javon. They said they had bent over backwards offering counseling, but do they know
right.
more than they're telling us?
Right, it's possible that they do know more than what they're telling us. But whatever it is, they can't be blamed for it. You know what I mean? And it could be that they're probably mum on some things, just to protect the families.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
then.
So.
I don't know if I agree with you. Didn't the NFL say something this week about changing the helmets? And didn't they say something about looking into these head injuries of these players? Didn't they say something?
Well, they're constantly doing that. The helmets have been changed over the years, and that's something that they're constantly doing. So that's something that's ongoing in the NFL.
But I thought they opened up some new dialogue this week about maybe there's something that needs to be looked into further about the head injuries of these guys.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it may be something new, more of the latest development. But what I'm saying to you is, going back to the men that you mentioned earlier. You mentioned Junior Seau, and the other men who just recently, you know, committed suicide fairly recently as a result of head too many head traumas and the injuries that they sustained from that. That's what I'm saying. The NFL had already been looking into those and had already been making changes to the uniforms or to the helmets. And my guess is that it's something that's going to be ongoing. You know what I mean? Now this, again, brings it back to the forefront. You know, maybe we need to look at the equipment some more. You know, but it's a situation where they had just weren't doing anything in terms of monitoring the equipment. You know what I mean? Not monitoring the equipment. You know, and it having to take someone, you know, killing someone and then committing suicide before they decided to go back and revisit it. I'm not sure that's the case. I think that's something that they had already been doing anyway.
I'm alluding to is the fact, I think, to mention the Cowboys, I forgot who Romo normally throws the ball to. It's his roommate when they on the road. I forgot his name.
Jason Witten.
Right. And they were talking about Witten the other day during a game, and they was like, you know, this guy is just like, you know, he's amazing, and, you know, he had this injury, and he was back on the field the next week, and he just won't, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And they were just bragging on the fact that even hurt, he was playing. And so I wonder, in a situation with some of these head injuries, are they putting these guys back on the field too soon? So is it a situation in which some of these guys are actually playing injured just for the sake of the game? And so in that situation, is that maybe what happened to this kid? I don't want to call him a kid, but he was a man.
Right.
Is that possibly what happened to Belcher?
Well, you know, and it does happen. It happens probably more often than the girl would care to acknowledge. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's really a catch 22. It's really a catch 22 for the NFL players, because you can be having a multi-million-dollar contract, okay, and sustain an injury, right? It's an injury. It's a serious injury, and if you don't play, it's like you got to play through it. You got to tough it out. You know what I mean? And so they'll do that. And if you don't play, if you say, okay, well, the coach, okay, can you go? And you know in your heart that you can't go. You're not physically able to go. And then you say, well, I'm not going to be able to do it, coach. Okay, now you're taking a pounding from your teammates. You're taking a pounding from the media. And you know, if you go out there, you can risk your body. You know, you can risk being further injured more seriously. And so if you sit out, then it's kind of like, you know, you're a bust. And you know what I mean? You're just sitting, you're just taking money. You're not doing anything. But then again, if you do play, you try to suck it up, all you're doing, you're further hurting yourself. And, you know, and it's going to really, really, in the long run, in the short run, you benefit the team. But in the long run, you on your own. We have a lot of players like that. I mean, even the great Earl Campbell. Earl Campbell was a bruiser in the NFL back in the mid to late 70s, early 80s. A punisher. But now he can't hardly walk. He looks bad. I mean, he can hardly walk. And you know, it's not just him, but it's so many players, so many former players who are just, I mean, if they were to go back and kind of, you know, do it all over again, they probably would not play as long as they played.
or you know, risk it, because again, the short term of it is I benefit the team if I suck it up and play. But where is the owners or where is the team when I can no longer play?
I agree. One thing that, you know, this has opened the dialogue about is domestic violence. And one thing that was brought out, one of the statistics that were brought out this week is, on average, three people are killed every day here in the U.S. By current or former intimate partners, according to advocates of domestic violence victims. And also, I don't know if it was something going on in the Kansas City area, if maybe it's in the water, but at least 14 people have died this way in the Kansas City area in 2012 to murder suicides. So that's crazy. I mean, murder suicide, 14 in 1 year, that's a lot.
It is.
You know, and so, you know, was it a situation where he turned on the news and saw this and said, you know, I'm as angry as that guy was, and I'm going to do it. And somebody said on one of the articles that I read that there had been a situation right there at the stadium where an employee's partner had come there and was attempting to kill her and then himself, but she ended up surviving right there at the same stadium. And I think that was this year. And so is it a situation in which, you know, sometimes you look at something on television and then you think, well, you know, I think I'll do that, too. I mean, I think it was selfish. If he killed her and he wasn't mental, if it wasn't a mental issue, then that was selfish. But you just wonder what makes a man get to a point where he says, if I can't have you, nobody will. You know, because they said she was threatening to leave. One report I did hear, and that was that she was saying that she was going to leave and that she was going to lawyer up. And that she was going to get full custody, and she was going to hit him with child support. Well, I want to say to any lady listening out there,
you say is that something that was reported?
Yeah, that was reported.
Okay, now, in the NFL, they make a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm gonna tell you, when you say that, the thing that the name Ray Caruth comes up. It comes to mind.
Yeah.
Remember Ray Caruth, Carolina Panthers, a wide receiver a few years ago, who they found him in a trunk, and he was hiding out in the trunk. He had just killed his girlfriend or ex girlfriend because she was pregnant for him, and you could probably infer that NFL a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm pregnant, you know, and I'm going to hit you with child support. That's a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We look at Terrell Owens and how he's got all these lawsuits against him, you know, child support, paternity suits and things like that against him. And so you're looking at all of that, and not to mention whatever financial chaos his life was already in, and this compiling on to that, you know, I can see how that could make him snap.
Yeah.
But I think the worst thing you can do, and I think Linda and I talked about this earlier, the worst thing you can do is be in the lion's mouth and then poke him. You know, if you know that a man has a temper, or if you know a woman has a temper,
right,
and they are subject to snap, I think pushing buttons is probably a bad thing. And I'm not saying that is what she did, but I'm just saying something. If what he said to her just before he shot her was that you can't say that to me, then on some level she pushed a button. And so,
you know,
I would.
It kind of sounds like what he did probably should not have caught her off guard. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And the reason why I say that is because, like you said, I don't know how long they were together, but apparently they were together for a while.
Yeah.
And you know, on again and off again type of thing. You know what I mean? So if you're in a relationship where it's on again, off again, on again, off again, then you know how to push each other's buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just like you said, if I know what that button is that would just make you just go over the edge, why would I go there?
And again, immaturity. immature, not understanding that, you know, someone, if they're very, very aggressive or whatever. I don't know if he'd been physical with her. There has not been any stories that I found that said that he had been physical with her. But, you know, sometimes you can just look in a person's eyes and see nobody home and know that if they haven't been physical, maybe they will become if you're not careful. So I just wonder, you know, maybe she felt safe because his mother was there, that nothing would happen. Maybe that.
I can see that too.
And so, you know, that's the ironic thing about the whole thing too, is typically a man who really loves his mother, he's not going to do really bad stuff in front of his mother. So again, another contradiction. Why would he leave that on his mother? It just makes no sense. And so in following this story this week, I just found myself so engrossed in the whys and the hows, you know, because I just couldn't understand why, and I just couldn't understand how he could do it, understanding what he was doing and what would happen if he did. I don't know. And so I just left my, it just left me like still a week later. Tomorrow is 1 week anniversary of their death, and I am just lost in this story with no clear answers as to why it happened, and hoping that it doesn't happen to the next person. But what it tells me on some level is you got to know when a relationship isn't good for you, regardless, regardless of what a person has. You know, if they're rolling in money, it doesn't matter, you know. Sometimes you just, and I'm not saying she was there for his money, but I'm just saying sometimes you just got to know when the relationship is over and it's no longer good for you, regardless of what the person has to offer. They're just not good for you.
Absolutely.
Say what, London?
All right, same thing. I wasn't waiting for him to say what he was going to say.
You were going to say something dumb?
I was going to say something, and I wanted to hear what he was going to say.
No. The only thing I was going to say is, again, I think that every team has a chaplain, and again, for me, maybe it's because I'm a pastor, you know, but I just find it kind of hard to not include some, you know, a spiritual aspect. So one of the things that I would recommend, you know what I mean, you know, and I'm not. You know, Hunt, you know, the owner or general manager of the Chiefs, but if I were in that position, and I'm not saying that they did not try that, but one of the things I would be looking at is really, really working closely, having a chaplain to work closely with my players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, looking at it from a spiritual standpoint, you know, because it's so much that goes beyond our natural sense of comprehension. You know what I mean? That you just can't explain it. You know, but I would certainly look at that. I would like to think that that there would be, you know, the NFL teams would really, really kind of have chaplains in on a lot of the counseling. And when people talk about counseling, I'm not even sure that they generally include like spiritual counseling. I think it's more, you know, psychology type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I would certainly want to enlist a team chaplain that could probably get down to get down to the core of what someone may be dealing with, you know, beyond the surface. And a lot of times, what we tend to do in counseling is to counsel people based on what we see, the surface matters. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But there's so much undercurrent, so much beyond the surface that we never even get to, you know. And unfortunately, Belcher, you know, this thing got out of hand.
Absolutely. And you were going to say what, Linda?
No, I was just trying to hear what he was going to say, because he was trying to get in to say something, so I just wanted to hear what he had to say.
Okay. One thing that came out this week, too, is that they both loved guns. I think it was stated that Javon Belcher had 8 guns, and that he and Cassandra Perkins both liked going to the gun range, and he was actually teaching her to shoot. You know, and I don't think, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with guns and owning guns, but I just
right.
I just wonder, you know, if the guns weren't in the house, would that have changed the outcome of this tragedy? And we will never know. But,
I don't think so, Carrie. I don't. I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like what I said earlier. If it wasn't a gun, it would have been a knife. You know what I mean? Or it would have been him strangling her. He was just hell bent on killing her.
So you think he had that much rage in him?
And obviously, I mean, he didn't shoot her once. He shot the woman 9 times.
Where did the information come from that they were what did you call those bullets?
Hollow point.
Yeah, where did that information come from?
There was an article. As a matter of fact, I want to say it was one of the articles that I thought I emailed it to you, but I'd have to go on my computer and pull it up. You know, if you consider doing an extension or a continuance next week, maybe you can kind of mention that. But I did read that.
Okay.
They talked about hollow point bullets in one of the articles. I'll email it to you after the show.
Okay, I appreciate that.
I thought he only shot her 3 times, so it was actually 9 times?
It was 9 times.
Is it 9 times, yes.
I've seen 8 and 9 repeatedly.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
I heard that there was bullet wounds in the neck, in the chest, and the abdomen, which, you know, most people would know those are pretty, they're pretty much areas where if they're hit, either of those areas can take you out of here. So, you know, you just wonder, you know, was it an automatic weapon? And did he just...
It was certainly a semi-automatic weapon because, remember, revolvers only have, you only have 6 shots in a revolver. That was 9 times.
Oh. Okay.
That was 9.
Okay, this is somebody who does not know a lot about guns, really, okay?
Right.
So they say sometimes one of the signs of a crime of passion is that the person shoots excessively. So, you know, maybe he did snap, and maybe this was, you know, I don't know. You know, it doesn't make it right, because if he never pulled the gun, then you wouldn't have the outcome. But you just wonder, you know, did he just snap? And if so, you know, the thing that makes me wonder – you know, you didn't snap when the police officer pulls you over. You didn't snap at the lady that you spent the night with. So what could have possibly went so wrong in that argument when you went home that you just decided that, you know, I'm just gonna end this for both of us? That's just the million-dollar question.
And, right. And, you know, the thing that makes this so unfortunate is whatever we try to piece together, whatever comment that we can make, we're only commenting on surface knowledge. You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's so much beneath the surface that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's hard. It's really, really hard to really pinpoint or to even be close to being accurate in terms of why would he do something like this? You know what I mean? How? What was said that was so bad? What was done that was so bad to drive a person to do what Javon Belcher did? You know, and again, all the comments that we're making are based on, you know, the surface knowledge. And there's so much more beneath the knowledge. And I don't know if we ever know. I don't know if we'll ever know that. You know, at least not in the next few days. I don't think so. But you know, it's puzzling.
You know, the thing that's very strange about this story too is that everybody seems to be very tight-lipped. You know, a lot of times when something like this happens, you know, people are like quoting stuff and talking about dates and times. And this is just one of those stories where, you know, you go from article to article to article, and pretty much the information is the same. I mean, very little, you know, contradictions in the stories, other than I saw one story that says, oh, well, they were happy, and every time I went over to their house, they were just, you know, bubbly and having a good time.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? And then everything else said just the opposite. But everything else pretty much about the story was consistent, and you just didn't hear a whole lot of leaks. And so that was just very shocking that everybody is being very tight-lipped. But one thing I was most shocked, well, I guess I shouldn't say, but I was, online there were some cruel comments, you know, about the fact he's a murderer, you know, and he should burn in hell, you know, and da-da-da-da. But I think Kathleen and I were talking about, but by grace, you know, there goes I. And so you have to be so careful when you come out with the mean-spirited comments. You just don't know what took a person to that point. And so even though I don't think what he did was right by any means, but I just thank God that my mind hadn't come to a point where I snapped and killed somebody violently like that. And so I find it hard to use the mean words and be real mean-spirited right through here, because first of all, you got two families grieving. You know, you got a baby girl now that does not have a parent, and you just don't know what happened. You know, would y'all agree with that? That, you know, Kathleen, you haven't said anything in a while. You agree with that? That you just have to be so careful, you know, because life is funny. You know, one day every year the sun is shining and the next day is pouring on you. And so
not only do you have to be careful and pray it up, as Donald says, but, you know, looking at this, take from it what you can learn from it. Because none of us is beyond reproach. Nobody. I don't think anybody on this call or anybody listening could stand up and say, you know, I've never done a stupid thing in my life, you know. And then people want to grade, okay, well, how stupid was it, 90% stupid or 35% stupid? You know, my stupid stuff is only about 15% stupid. No, you just really don't know when you're in the middle of a situation, really, how you're going to respond, unless you've done some incredible in-depth work on yourself. If you are totally linked into the circuitry of the Holy Spirit and God so that you have control, so that you have somebody to turn to. So for anybody to be, even Jesus said it, you know, he who is without sin cast the first stone. So come on. You know, how many of us are going to really sit around and, you know, take this thing apart bit by bit and say, you know, well, was it this and was it that and is he wrong and that? You know, listen, as far as I'm concerned, this is, again, like I said at the top of the call, it's a travesty.
Yes.
It's a most, you know, it's a gut-wrenching thing. If you really feel into it, it's gut-wrenching. And for me, again, as I said, as a single mother, one, you know, the mother of a young man, God bless him, thank God, he's phenomenal, you know, the light of my life, really. And I thank God for him, you know, and a lot of his friends. But it doesn't mean that they didn't go through trouble. You know, it wasn't always this way. It wasn't always easy. You know, there's a whole lot of days I spent on my knees, and I think that if more of us would humble ourselves and pray, not only would we save our own, you know, keep our own selves in check and connected to God, but we would change the state of our land. You know, when we humble ourselves and pray, seriously, and this is what, again, this is how we can prevent these things. Mentor some children. You know, the majority of our young people, and I'm talking about African-American children, teens, young people, the majority of them are now growing up in single-parent households, and I'm not downing single-parent households. I'm one of them. You know, but we need mentors for our kids. So, you know, this for me, respectfully, rather than really focusing on this situation, unless we can gather together all the mentors for little Zoe, look next door, you know, look down the block across the street and grab one of these young men, grab one of these young ladies, you know, 22 years old with a 3-month-old baby. That's a young girl. Is she out of college age? You know, maybe she didn't go to college, but, you know, you're talking between 18 and 22 years old. Most girls are just coming, these ladies, young ladies are coming out of college. What do they know? You know,
she was attending junior college. I think she skipped this semester because she had the baby. Yeah.
22. You know, that, I mean, and I know if we go back, you know, troglodyte days, we have a whole lot of, you know, that's when two kids, young ladies would have the babies. But now 22, that's young. So, you know, I think they said her mom was there, his mom was there. So thank God there was a woman there, an elder there, trying to help them get through that part of it. But we need more. So, okay, God bless Jovan Belcher and Kathy and their families and baby Zoe. but let's not see any more Jovans or any more Cassies. And they're right there in front of us every single day. Every day I look down the street and there's, you know, boys walking down the street with their pants down to their knees and all, you know, whatever. They need mentors. They need us. And that's how we can change this situation. This is how we can prevent it.
Hey, man, you know, Kathleen, that is awesome what you're saying, because as you were talking, I'm reminded of the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. I forget that young man's name. My mind draws a blank. But they interviewed him, and he said something that was very, very powerful. He said, it just makes you wonder, it makes you think about the times when you ask somebody, you know, when you see somebody today, you say, "Yeah, how you doing?" I mean, do we really mean how are you doing? You know, if they would say, "I'm not doing well," I mean, how do you respond to that? You know what I mean? So what it makes us, what we must do is, when you ask somebody how they're doing, you know, and if they're not doing well, I mean, can somebody be honest and say, "I'm not feeling well. You know, I'm having a rough day. I'm, you know, my day is just going south. You know, and I need some help." You know, okay, and then we should be prepared to be able to say something, you know, to encourage that person. You know, say, you know, have a word of comfort for them. You know what I mean? And one of the things that I always pray about is, Lord, touch me, use me, anoint me to bless somebody, to be a blessing to somebody's life, and to minister to someone who may be going through something. I work in the school system. I work at DeSoto High School here in Texas, and I thank God that I have kids, teenagers, come to me all the time, daily. They're coming to me and asking me, "Mr. Lee, you know, could you pray for me?" Or I got situation going on at home. And I'm telling you, this past week, I've had a couple of kids, one boy, one girl, I mean, different times coming to me, and with tears in their eyes. Just yesterday, I was counseling, and I'm a security officer. I'm not even a counselor at the school. You see what I'm saying? But, you know, this kid is going through something, and this kid is breaking down crying, and I'm talking to him, and I'm sharing the word with me, the word of God, with him just to encourage him. And you know, I know things may seem tough, and I know things are tough in your life. I know things are hard, but you know what? To be true, let me be honest with you. It could be a whole lot worse than what it is right now. You're actually in a good position, as ugly as it may feel. You're actually in a good position, because now where you are, you're in a place where now you can, you know, you can hear from God. Now you're in a position where you want to hear from God and you want to do better. You know what I'm saying? So what am I saying? What I'm saying is that, just like Kathleen said, what we have to do is we have to make ourselves available to people, because you never know what somebody is going through. You never know the deep-rooted hurt and agony that they're going through, the horrific state of being that they may have back at home. You know what I mean? So you're not going to know what everybody is doing or what's going on with everybody, but at least pray. Okay, Lord, I don't know when I go to work, when I go into the workplace or when I go to school, I don't know the types of personalities that I'm going to encounter in terms of how, you know, what people are dealing with and, you know, and how they respond and what they deal with. But let them see in me something that's approachable.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Let me actually, you know, let me piggyback off that just a little bit. A lot of times when I say to someone, and I'm sure the rest of y'all are guilty too, when you say, "Hello, good morning, how you doing?" you really don't even listen for the answer. They may say, "I'm having a terrible day," but you've gone on past that moment. You know what I mean? So most of the time when we act, we really are not even sticking around to listen if they said they were having a terrible day.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. One thing I can say, and trust me, I'm not perfect. I'm not trying to put myself out there. But what I'm, that's my point. My point is for us to, you know, again, pray, Lord, show me how, you know, make me available. Help me to make myself available for somebody else. For example, one of the things that I practice, I mean, it's a conscientious practice that I do. You know, I'll ask somebody, "How you doing?" You know, I'll say, "How you doing?" in passing, and they say, "How you doing?" You know what I mean? You know, but at the same time, if, you know, there's sometimes I'll say, "How you doing?" and somebody say, "Well, I'm not having a good day." You know, then I'll stop.
That's how you can prevent that from happening. And I'm not saying that Jamal Charles would go out and do that, you know, because, you know, I feel so bad. But you just never know the type of depression and the type of anxiety someone can suffer just from that. You know what I mean? Just to think, oh, my God, you know, if I had introduced them, then they'd both still be here. That type of thing. And that can weigh heavily on. And I can see how it can be an easy thing to feel that way. And it can be and one of the thing about a depression, one thing about being a depression, being in depression, sometimes you can fall so deep into a depression you don't even realize you don't even realize it. You see what I'm saying? You think that you're functioning at normal capacity when the truth of the matter is there is depression going on and you really can't think straight. And so again, just like Kathleen said, you know, I think that the Chiefs should reach out, and if they have not, that's assuming they have not done that, okay? But I would hope that they would reach out to Jamal Charles especially and his wife and say, hey, you know what? This is not your fault, okay? This is not your fault.
Nobody could have foreseen it.
Yeah.
No.
You know, speaking of depression and anxiety, There's several people that I think will have a lasting memory that they probably will never shake, and that's the three people that witnessed Belcher commit suicide, and also his mother that witnessed what happened with him killing Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you get past that? I mean, how do you shake a memory like that?
It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
It's going to truly take some time to heal.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just a time we can't judge and do all that. We just got to put it in the Lord's hand.
Oh, yeah.
It's not for us to judge.
And, you know, and I think a lot of people were judging, like I said, online. If you go, there's so many Facebook pages that were dedicated to the memory or rest in peace pages or just all types of pages about Javon Belcher and Cassandra Perkins this week. And, you know, I took my time and read through a lot of the comments. And, you know, it's amazing how people can take the energy to be so mean-spirited. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, you might not like what a person does, but at least take the time to just say a prayer for them, you know, rather than to say something mean-spirited. You still got to take into consideration that there's two families out there that are grieving, I mean, who had nothing to do with this. And so you got to take into consideration when you're posting those mean comments, what that means to the family. You know, when they look and they see their loved ones being talked about or misinformation being put out there about their loved ones. So you got to be real careful. And I tried to do that tonight, y'all. I tried to be real respectful of the memory of both of them because I don't know what happened on the morning of December 1st that caused Javon Belcher to snap. And I don't know, you know, what the comment was that Cassandra Perkins possibly said to him or allegedly said to him that made him go there. But, you know, just realize that, you know, if you can say something nice, then it just might be a time that you just don't say anything at all because grief is a funny thing. You know, everybody does it in their own way, you know, and so you just have to, you know, realize that something you say or some mean comment that you post online, you know, could really just, you know, deepen this grief process for the family. So I would just say to everyone out there that's you know, looking at the situation, you know, take the time to look at it that what if this was my family? You know, what if this was my sister? What if this was my brother, my son? Could I deal with some of these comments that are being posted out here? So I don't want to put anything out there that's going to hurt anybody. So I'm just putting that out there, y'all. Just be more considerate and thoughtful of the family because Javon Belcher nor Cassandra Perkins will be reading these comments, but their families and their friends and their loved ones will. So take that into consideration as you think about posting on their pages. One last thing I'd like to close out with tonight, y'all, domestic violence. We don't know if that was a situation in which, you know, this was, but it has all the signs and the makings of a situation that could have been a domestic situation and maybe became abusive, who knows. But for someone who may be in a situation, and I want all y'all to chime in on this tonight, for someone who may be in a situation that they need to leave, like maybe, you know, Cassandra Perkins possibly could be alive today had she stayed gone. But what could change the outcome of someone in a situation of a Cassandra Perkins who needs to leave? How do you leave? I mean, it's a question tonight. If you are in a situation that looks like it's getting dangerous, how do you leave and still have your life intact? What could Cassandra have done to leave this situation and safely get out of it with her and her baby? How could this situation have changed? How could the outcome have been different? Kathleen,
Kathleen, you go first.
I think Kathleen.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
I don't want to assume that this was, I don't know, Carrie. I think you were talking about that maybe there was domestic violence in their relationship or not, and I don't know if there is, but just speaking to any woman who is in a situation where she is being abused, first thing she's got to do is really seek some help and be as secure about seeking assistance as possible. And making sure that she is protecting her physical body, her safety, when she's seeking some assistance, some guidance on how to get out. And this is, you know, sometimes you just have to make a run for it, but other times you have to do some serious planning. So it depends on what your situation is and what you happen to be going through. But the thing that I just want to share with women is that you can get away. You can break away, and that is not, that does not mean love. When someone is hitting you, it doesn't mean that they love you. And yes, you can love someone and still leave them. Just because you feel like you still love him and he's hurting you, don't think that you just can't leave him and you can't survive. And the other thing too, you know, one of the most important things that I can share with anyone is that it is likely to get worse before it will get better. So if you think he just, you know, he just pushed you this time, he just cursed you that time, he just pushed you down, you know, it's not that bad. It just blackened my eye. It escalates. So I just, you know that and start to gather yourself together, get the support that you need, get the counseling that you need, because it does take counseling. And if for no other reason, if you have children, be aware of the fact also that you could jeopardize having your children taken away from you because you won't leave a situation where you are being abused. So take care of it.
I want to be clear why I call it a domestic situation, because of the way it turned out, the outcome. So if you say, well, maybe he never hit her before, but the outcome showed that that's what it was. I mean, the outcome of the situation, that's a domestic violence situation, so that's why I put that out there. Okay, Linda, what would you say to somebody that needs to get out?
Your question is, I'm not married, and I have a boyfriend, but I'm not going to take any. I'm blessed. I have to say I'm blessed. I've never had anybody try to hit me or mistreat me. I mean, you know, so let's see.
I think we have to be careful though when we in the way we leave. We can't just pack up and say we gone. We got, you know, because it could turn out like the Cassandra Perkins situation. I would think, and Donnelly, you can chime in on this, but I would think that if a woman is fearful that the man might become violent, isn't there a safe way to leave rather than to say, I'm just leaving, I'm going to get out of here, I'm going to put child support on you? Isn't there a safer way to get out of here?
I believe there is, and this is what I would recommend. One, I would recommend pray. I would hear me out. I would recommend pray. I would say open your Bible. Okay, this is a perfect opportunity for you to experience God, okay? Go to Psalm 91. And Psalm 91, for those who may not know, is that book in the Bible where it talks about God's hedge of protection around you, how God has placed his angels, has given his angels charge over you, which
yeah.
means that if you believe God and you really believe him and you're praying, now you may be scared. I mean, I'm not to say you're not going to be scared, but you may be scared. But open the scriptures, read that, and say, okay, and understand that
that was written for you. That was written for such a time as this. So you read that, get that into your heart, okay? And then pray, okay? Have someone, of course you got someone in your life who knows how to pray. Pray with someone who knows how to pray, and when you pray, you're praying expecting to hear God, expecting to hear God as he gives you directives on what to do next. So what I do, I pray. Now what I'm going to do is in prayer, God is going to show me how to leave, you know what I mean? How to leave, you know, and then where to go. There is a place of haven. Find a place of haven. Of course, you're not going to say, well, you know what? I'm out of here. You're not going to tell them you're leaving, you know what I mean? But through prayer, God will give you a peace in your spirit. First of all, he'll give you a peace in your spirit. Okay, now, just be calm. Be stay, you know, just, I mean, just unsuspecting, you know, and when that time comes, and that you'll know in your heart, okay, now it's time for me to leave. And then when I leave, it's already mapped out where I'm going, okay? And then, of course, you follow the police report. You got to do that. You got to document that, you know what I mean? But you know, prayer, believe in God, having someone in your life who will pray with you, a safe haven where you can go, and also documenting it with the police, and I believe that you'll be fine. You know, because here's the thing: domestic abuse. Someone who is violent, they feed off of fear. You know what I mean? It's fear based. So if I can inflict enough fear into your heart, I will have you too afraid. I will have you too afraid to move. You see what I'm saying? But it's a situation where if I don't move, I'm damned, and if I do move, I'm damned. Well, I got to make a decision. So I may as well just pray and map out my exit, and then take a chance leaving than staying.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know,
So to
wrap everything up, to summarize what I just said, I believe that when you pray and you have a safe haven that you go to, God will give you the wisdom on exactly how to exit out and be safe, and there's his hedge of protection around you.
And you never tell them, I'm going to seek child support on you and I'm leaving. You leave them and then seek child support, or not say seek child support, but put child, if the child needs assistance, then you put child support on them. But I think those are fighting words.
Right. I mean, if you know, when you do the child support thing, obviously you don't do that at that. You know what I mean? You have to use wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You have to use wisdom. Yeah, you can put child support on them, but it does not help you if you're already in a situation like that for you to go making threats.
I agree.
Just because that's what you're going to do, that don't mean that you have to show your hand. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
That's true.
Okay, we're going to close out, but Pastor Lee, can you, in 1 minute or less, say a prayer for the Belcher and the Perkins family?
Heavenly Father, in the name of Jesus, Father God, we lift up the Belcher family. We lift up the Perkins family, Lord, for their loss. Your word says, Father God, in the name of Jesus, your word says, Lord, that weeping may endure for the night, but joy cometh in the morning. So therefore, Father God, we are praying an eternal peace, Lord, a peace that surpasses all understanding into the hearts of each and every one of the family members of the people impacted. In Jesus' name, we thank you, Father God, for being their comforter. Amen.
Amen.
That's going to have to be the final word. I'd like to say thank you to my guests, Linda Wilkins, Kathleen Williams, and Pastor Donald Lee. Also, a reminder, y'all, Center Stage is looking for new sponsors. So if you'd like to advertise here on Center Stage, drop me a line this week at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Again, that's centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Also, a reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Again, thank you to my guests for being with me tonight. Thank you, the audience, for listening. And to the Perkins and to the Belcher family, we here at Center Stage would like to say that you are in our prayers, and we pray, as Pastor Lee said, that God gives you peace that surpasses all understanding during your time of grief. Okay, y'all, we got to get out of here. Our motto here at Center Stage is less music. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.